Time passed, I'm sure, while I pondered that image, there with my eyes shut. Soon it lost its bright neon colors, outgrew its insistent need to hold center stage. It was dressed now in more plausible hues, the rich, warm tones appropriate to a thing as old and expensive as I now supposed it to be. To look at it now, I had to direct my gaze down to where I had really seen it, to where its weight still pulled at my wearying arm. I was beginning to enjoy looking at things this way, untroubled by all those extra photons that barrage your brain when your eyes are open. Now, with my eyes closed, things were coming into focus. Now I could see not only my hand, but my legs, my feet, the bench, the other benches, the marble-covered walls, the pillars, the yellow-green lockers down there in the distance, the entire station, in fact, could now be seen. Now revealed itself to be much smaller than I remembered, and more crudely rendered, or more crumbling from age and disrepair. The newsstand was missing, the wall behind it torn out, the gaping hole partly tacked over with stenciled sheets of the cheapest press board, and it wasn't just the newsstand. At least three of the marble pillars had been removed, their places taken, the loads of the heavy balconies borne by a system of rusty winches and scaffolds, and the clocks, those giant, presiding, enantiomorphic moons. They no longer told the same time. The clocks reminded me of Miss Two, so I aimed my attention to the place where I remembered her sitting, filled with a sudden comparative curiosity as to the fate of her extremities. I looked over to where she ought to be, tried to remember what she looked like, her face, her neat clothes, her metaphysical stare. But all I could see was her sturdy plaid luggage, that harmonic series of ascending volumes, that subdivided wardrobe still arranged in order on an otherwise empty bench. In the row behind me, across the aisle to my right, it was the same story. Possessions present, human absent. The executive gym bag still showed the indentation of Mr. One's unrestful head, but the recumbent body, the squirming businessman, was now gone. I looked up at the swirling nothingness, the precarious emptiness, the massive non-entity poised above me, and I thought, of course, I get it. It's the avalanche! The emptiness has started to fall in chunks. It's taking out each sentient being, consuming us one by one. Oddly enough, I felt my hatred ebbing. I mean, as I considered the imminent dissolution of my separate, striving self, I felt I was ready at last to make peace with the majestic, impersonal forces that besieged me, with the unknown, unwanted thing that had usurped my hand, with the inexorable emptiness, with silence and solitude and the slipperiness of numbers, even with my impending demise. I looked up toward that cavity, as if to say, okay, I'm almost ready. I have only one question. I just want to know. But just then, I felt a presence beside me, a warmth, a whiff of perfume, and then a woman's voice saying, excuse me. I couldn't help noticing your beautiful instrument. It's very rare, very precious, and in wonderful condition. But you know that. May I sit down?